You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
We'll take a glass together!
This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Cheers! Hi,
Cheers,
Caleb! Oh my gosh, it's our closest clink that we've had in months because we're in the same city.
New York City, hey!
Finally, welcome back.
Since March.
That's a long-ass time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, welcome back. And everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Equity One, Broadway's Happy Hour. Today, we are really excited to be sitting down with another one of our Broadway Podcast Network podcast hosts. Please welcome our guest this week, Amiri Asai from The Take On.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
What is going on?
Literally nothing. We are about to tear into these drinks. I cannot wait. Are you drinking with us today?
I'm drinking tea because I'm always spilling it.
Yes.
Oh. We'll be
careful. There's a lot of technology, so you don't want to spill on your computer.
No, I won't. I won't.
And it's early there for you, right? You're in LA.
I'm in LA. It's 1 o'clock. It's, you know, with quarantine, I'm always waking up so late. So it's like the morning for me.
It's definitely the morning. I just finished my coffee like an hour ago. So it's amazing. Like a slow process for me. A lot of like re-microwaving because it needs to be hot. Got to stay hot.
I've conquered the day already. Like I've like cleaned my apartment, did yoga, did a workout, took a shower, like hop on my schedule, like join me.
Wow. You're on another level there. Whoa.
I know. Whoa. Like, I'm back in New York. I'm hitting it hard.
Ugh, it's too much. It's Saturday. It's the weekend. I'm relaxing. Let me relax.
Right?
Well, Caleb and I are having a Q cocktail this week that was delivered to us. And to talk about the cocktail is Ryan Garrison from Q Cocks. Can we bring in Ryan? Hi.
Hey, guys.
How
Cheers.
Are you? Thanks for coming.
Cheers.
Wait, okay, so tell us about the drink this week.
So this week's Q-Cock is called the Black Rose. Mine has already been opened. You guys
have more
control than I did. it's a tequila, Blanco tequila-based cocktail this week with rose water as like the main feature. A few fruit juices, some pineapple and watermelon, mint in there to balance it all out. And then the beautiful black color comes from a pinch of activated charcoal, which is, on its own level has some health benefits. It's really nice. It adds like depth to the floral notes of the drink. So please, cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
All right, Caleb, you're
in that tea.
And your seat.
Wow. Okay, that's really, really good.
Good. Yeah, what's fun about this is that it has like you don't expect something black to have fruity floral taste.
Wait, what am I tasting? Oh, the watermelon juice. That is so yummy. Really good in there.
You'd expect it to be like, you know, what do they call it? Like when you mix all the sodas together at the soda fountain when you were a kid.
A suicide?
Yes. When you're right. Like, I want Mountain Dew and I want Dr. Pepper. Like, that's what you'd expect it to taste like because it's black. But like, this is refreshing.
This is delicious. Yeah, it's really shocking how like fresh and kind of like light.
Well, that's actually... Our method is really close to the suicide method. You know, just grab and... Sometimes it works out, so.
Just pour and pour and pour. Now, we're enjoying we're enjoying this week, but we also wanted you to talk about something really, really exciting that is happening for next week. So Caleb and I are celebrating our 3-year anniversary of Equity One podcast on the 15th exactly next Saturday. We will have been doing episodes for 3 years. So we are going to have a huge live show like we're having right now with lots of Broadway celebrity guests. And we are going to be playing all your favorite games, talking about some of our favorite moments from the last 3 years. And we are very excited to have partnered with QCox to have a very special Equity One cocktail that was inspired by our show. Oh, and Ryan helped make it for us. So will you talk about what the drink is for next week?
Yeah, of course. We are so excited as well to be a part of this. The drink that is coming next week is called the Two Show Day. All about Equity One. So this one is a vodka-based cocktail. And we're bringing in a homemade dragon fruit syrup, which has like such a beautiful pink tone to it. Like that neon that is in your logo, it fits it perfectly. So bright pink, some triple sec, a nice sound, which is made like a water with infused with cinnamon and clove to kind of add some like herbal bitterness into there. And of course, as the garnish for this one is a blue gummy bear. Because you guys always have gummy bears, right? That's your thing?
Yes, that is. Yeah, that
we
is
love a gummy bear.
So we have inside, to throw that in there.
That's an inside look into our recording, is that Caleb and I scarcely record without a bag of gummy bears. We are so excited to have this cocktail next week. If you want the cocktail, you can order it by Monday at 5, if you're in the New York area, New York City. Sorry, upstate. The same thing. If you're in the city, you can order it. You can go to Q Cocktails on Instagram, or the form is also in our bio on Equity One Podcast. There's a drop down menu where you can go, click it, order it. And the first 50 orders of the drink are also going to receive an Equity One shot glass. Get those orders in and tag us on social media when you get your delivery next week, and we'll share some of those pictures in the live show next week, and you can enjoy the cocktail with us as we celebrate our 3-year anniversary. We are so excited. Thank you so much, Ryan, for all your hard work with the libations. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure for sure.
And we will talk to you soon. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Cheers.
Great. Cheers, guys.
Ding.
Oh my God.
Hey.
This drink is so... I honestly can't get over it. It's so delicious.
Because, it's so I feel like I'm more 20 than and I'm not 21 or something. I'm sitting here while y'all are drinking. I'm like
tempting. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see how this goes, and then maybe you can have a cocktail. Amir, how are you doing in this quarantine life?
I'm good. I've actually, you know what? Like, I'm an outgoing introvert, so it's been really great for me. I mean, I do love going to events and, you know, working as a publicist for years. I don't really miss it. I don't miss any of the social interactions, honestly. I don't really like people. So I like animals, and it's been great because I can walk around my neighborhood and I see coyotes and bunnies, and I'm quite happy with this. Like, I realized how little I enjoy genuinely talking to people. I like interviewing people, but I don't really like talking to people. So it's been great. That's a long-winded answer. Yeah.
No, it's so funny because it's so true. I think we're all kind of like, you know, we had a break away from people. There are certain people I really, really miss hanging out with. And and certain people where I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, I've reached my 10-person bubble. So I'll see you. I'll see you when there's a vaccine, hun. But great talk. Great keeping up with you on Instagram, you know?
Absolutely.
I also love not having to worry about giving a hug or not giving a hug. It's just like, no hugs, no handshakes, don't touch me. Like,
right.
Hi. Like,
don't touch
from a distance.
Yes.
Because, you know, people don't always smell great. They don't always smell great.
So
it's true, especially if we're venturing
in the
out.
Summer.
Yeah, and in quarantine, you know, I've been experimenting with, you know, I'm not wearing deodorant every day because I'm not going anywhere and I'm not doing anything.
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
So I gotta save those coins. You know, we can't be just going out and buying deodorant all the time. Like I buy deodorant every day. Like what is that?
Stockpile.
Caleb, how is being back in the city for you?
Being back, it feels really great. I love being in my apartment, the sun coming in, getting everything, like being away from your home for 5 months. Mm-hmm. It's just great to be back. We haven't ventured out much because we're doing the 2-week quarantine, the mandatory one. So just enjoying some alone time, which we were so busy when we were in Ohio and stuff like that. So it's actually like nice to slow down. I love it.
Yeah.
Talk to me in 2 weeks.
Especially being with like family, you know, both of we did the visit family thing and then come home. It's really nice to get back to your kind of like solo existence.
Yes.
Okay, so Amir, what have you been watching during this time?
What have I not been watching is probably a shorter list. I generally, even before quarantine, because I worked out at an after show company, so we would cover like every show. So I just put it on myself to watch a little bit of everything, except Mrs. America. I haven't watched that yet.
I watched one or two episodes. Actually, I watched the first one and the last one, and I loved both.
You did like bookends? Why did you do that?
Because Cole watches it when I go to bed sometimes. Yeah. And so I caught in, but I loved it.
It's
it was
so
great.
Good. Michael and I watched really the whole good. Thing. It's great. He thought it was a little sleepy. Like, he was checking his phone. But I was riveted. You know, I loved it. I loved it so much. You watch a lot. You know, you're very, like, you got your finger on the pulse of, like, the pop culture world. And you talk a lot about, now, do you watch The Housewives religiously?
I do. So actually, I went to high school with the creator's daughter. So he pitched that show to my dad. And I remember being like 15 years old. And he was like, we're going to get a bunch of housewives. They're going to drink. They're going to go on vacation. They're going to fight over rooms. And my dad's like, I'm not investing in that. What is that? So that's Scott Dunlop. And he is the creator. And his name is on every single one of the housewives. So it's just really neat to see it all come together. I knew a lot of the original housewives from Orange County because I grew up here in Orange County. And so it's just cool to see it all come together. I love it. I mean, I think that sometimes it's, you know, it's not women, you know, supporting women like Ramona says. Ramona says it, but I don't think they are really supporting each other. But I think it's smart to go on the show if you have something to promote. Like I would love to be the first, you know, real house husband of Bravo. That's just me putting that into the universe. I think I would be great. But you know, we'll see what happens.
There are the rumor mill right now is saying that Atlanta might actually, they're considering like having Apollo, as an actual cast member. And there was one other husband that they would be like actual cast members. That's the rumor, but you know how the things pop up. It's like, you know, there's different news on who's the next housewife every day.
I try and watch it all the time, and I can never get through an episode. It's just not for me. I don't know. But see, I would really love Real Housewives of Xenia, Ohio, some farm town where they have to like deal with like trailer trash and like farm life, because you know that's the real tea. Like they gotta get like the kids to Walmart. They gotta get like you just, I would love more down home living stuff.
I don't know.
So that's TLC. Caleb wants TLC. Yeah, just watch TLC then. It's like, don't bring that to Bravo. We don't have trailer trash to Bravo.
We need it. Sorry. We need glamour. Like that's part of it. Like that makes it work. Like we, you know, for example, Potomac just started. And it doesn't do it as much for me because, like, some of those townhomes, like, I could maybe own one day. You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't have that kind of aspirational, you know, glamour that makes it so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And so, okay, but quick thoughts on Denise on Beverly Hills.
So I wrote an article about a year ago because I saw the Twitter thing where Denise basically wrote, like, what should my tagline be? And then Brandy responded, you should talk about how you eat, P-U-S-S-Y. And that was her response on Twitter. So I already knew that they were, like, hooking up way back when. So I wrote an article about how they have an open relationship. And basically in that article, I was like, the gays have been doing this for eons. It's not that shocking. So the Housewives pretending this, like, big thing. Let's remember, Denise is known for wild things. She's known for dating Charlie Sheen, being married to Charlie Sheen. Come on. Like, her sleeping with Brandy is so low on the totem pole of shock value. But these women are so sheltered in their gorgeous closets that they're all a shook. All of y'all have experimented. Give me a break. Like, Erica sitting at that table, Garcelle. I mean, come on. Like, these women are pretending like this is the end of the world. Give me a break.
I know. I think that, like, Denise, you know, Denise is doing the thing where she's like trying to have her like fixing reputation season. Like the first season, she kind of like got it figured out. And now she's like, wait, I want to control how I'm looking. Bravo, effing bravo. Yeah.
They all do that now. Ramona, I'm like, stop breaking the fourth wall. Like we're all sitting in quarantine getting invested. And then you keep breaking the fourth wall and like, stop doing that.
Oh.
Not a fan.
I love it.
Does she look at the camera and like commentary? Or
oh
does
yeah,
she do?
Ramona. Oh. So recently, Ramona was throwing a a birthday party with 60 of her closest girlfriends, and she Leah, who I think is amazing, was dancing. The housewives were just dancing, and Ramona's sister was like, oh, "You're being ridiculous. You're so trashy. You like you cheapen the group," and Ramona was like, shut it down, pointing at the camera and like getting a producer. Meanwhile, Sonia is a mess and is stomping like on mirrors and like breaking. It's just amazing. Chef's kiss.
Just watch that episode, Caleb. Just give it a try. Just watch that birthday episode and give it the full hour.
Yeah.
I'm taking the notes down. Birthday episode. Yes. Oh, I got it.
Yeah. I mean, New York is the way to get into it because it's just the women are so good. What's your favorite of the franchise?
I think my favorite is New York and it's Dorinda Medley Clip. Like, I am obsessed with her. I'm obsessed with Giovanni. I'm obsessed with Luann. I think it's so good because those women are actually living in, like, $15 million penthouses. Like, they're living in some really expensive, aspirational stuff. Like, for me, when I watch Beverly Hills and Garcelle's living in a townhouse in the Valley, I could do that. So I need Sutton money. I need some craziness.
Ugh, I wish she were. I wish she were holding a. What do they hold in Beverly Hills? Like a diamond or a champagne glass or something. I love Sutton. Oh my god, she didn't start off great for me. I have to say, I didn't love her at the beginning, but now I'm like, I love her. Also, thoughts on Garcelle being maybe too busy this season.
So Garcelle, that's a great question. Garcelle is kind of doing the Erica, right? Like, is kind of unapproachable, is like unavailable, is kind of, is playing that game of like the elusiveness. I know she's busy, but I think that it's a little bit Beverly Hills moving too quickly because of BLM. And this happens a lot, like it happened with The Bachelor, where they aggressively try to course correct and, oh, we're going to put a Black person, but it's very forced. And, you know, I think that it's important that diversity, me being Persian, is done in a very eloquent way. And I feel like when they're just like, oh, we're just going to put, it's not thought through. In my opinion, I think a great person would have been Will Smith's ex-wife, who's actually friends with Garcelle, and she was on the show. She would be a lot more interesting because she's, you know, friends with Will. She hangs out with Will Smith and Jada Pinkett and the whole entanglement. It would have been really interesting to see them, that whole dynamic on the show, instead of Garcelle, who seems a bit too busy.
Yeah, she's just like constantly flying to her jobs, you know, which is amazing. But then it's like she's not at any of the events.
Oh,
I was surprised she went to Rome.
Do they go with her for the events, or is it just like she's gone and they don't film it?
She's gone. I mean, they don't film it. No, no. When she's out of town, she's like, you know, and she's new on the show, so she's not going to be someone that they like follow to work somewhere. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
So, I would take that paycheck. I would be like, I'll stop in for a few episodes, take the paycheck, and like leave. Like, why? I'm happy for her.
It's not as compelling because you don't get to like know her or see any interactions with the women, you know?
Sure.
She'll probably won't be back for a second season. She's kind of like Kim, who was on Atlanta. They don't invest enough time. They're like, I'm busy, I'm doing a talk show, I'm filming things, and they kind of get wrapped up. And, you know, I've actually worked for Erica, and I posted about it online, and her publicist is actually saying I'm lying. So there's a whole, I'm involved in my own Bravo show on the side. Because I actually worked for her and she was a nightmare. She wouldn't go on live TV. She tried to get me fired from a private plane. So some of these housewives, they take the show and they make that drama their real lives. And that's when it becomes problematic. But it's good TV, so I'm not going to complain.
It's the best TV. We have no choice but to stan here in this house.
Absolutely.
So, Amir, we always start off our official interview by asking our guests what first got them interested in the arts. You know, you work in entertainment, and what first kind of caught your eye about that world?
I love that question. I was actually with my dad, who's immigrated from Iran in 1974. So very, you know, traditional, and growing up in a, you know, Muslim family, it's very conservative as well. I remember watching a movie Jonathan Taylor Thomas. And it was about them in the woods and they were like brothers. I can't remember the name of the movie, but there was a bear in it. I remember being like 8 or 9 and I was like, Dad, I'm going to be on that screen one day. And he was like, and he turned around with a thick accent. And my dad's name is Jafar, which is already funny. And he turned around. Yeah, Jafar. And so he turned around and he, you know, in a thick accent was like, you know, Hollywood, everyone's a drug dealer. Everyone's a criminal. And so I remember as an 8-year-old being like, oh, wow, that really dashed my dreams. Like, guess I can't do that because I'm not a drug dealer. But then I found, yeah, I was like, all right. And so I found PR in high school. I realized you to not be a drug dealer because you're not on screen, you could be a publicist. So you're around talent. So then I studied PR at USC and I was in entertainment PR. My first job, I worked with Michael B. Jordan, Melissa McCartney, Donald Glover. So I just being around talent, I was like, this is really amazing. And it's still kind of professional. It's not like, but little did my dad know, is actually delivering drugs to a lot of celebrities. Because that's part of the job. Unfortunately, that is part of the job. I've delivered Emmy dresses with a bag of weed in it. Like, I mean, it's very interesting what you do as a publicist. Never hard drugs. Let's make that very clear. I'm not that kind of publicist. But people do call and, you know, and they want things and you have to give it to them. And they're in, you know, what do you call it? Like, we're kind of high-end babysitters. Sure. And so I found that and And I was like, okay, like I'm going to do this. And, I worked as a publicist for years and then I stopped hiding from the cameras. And I, cause as a publicist, you wear all black. I've been to the Golden Globes, the Emmys, the Oscars, you hide. Nobody wants to see you. Nobody wants to talk to you. You step in and you piss everyone off by saying, don't ask that question, et cetera. It was always me kind of ruining the fun, right? They want to ask about an affair and I would step in and say, you can't ask that or take that off the record, et cetera. So my job was always kind of not so much fun. And then I realized, I was like, why am I helping other people become successful when I could just be helping myself? And I'm a lot funnier and a lot more, and listen, I say this with a lot of humbleness because I do have a lot of insecurity, but I know that I'm funnier and more talented than most people in Hollywood. So I started doing my own thing and it kind of just became a thing and people wanted to hear from me and people wanted to see a queer Muslim in a bustier running down the street and living his best life. And it just, it works. So it is what it is. I'm not going to question.
Yeah. the content we didn't know we needed, you know, like, but
exactly.
But that's the thing. And I think that that is like, you know, again, tale as old as time in the industry and not just the industry, but in the world is that once you start kind of following what you do and just being yourself and doing what you want, then things really start to line up how you want them to.
Exactly.
What I'm curious to know what actually first how did you find out that PR was a job? What kind of led you that? Because you were interested in this world, couldn't be a part of it, but then like, I'm curious about that.
This is probably going to be the gayest answer I've ever given on any interview. So you're welcome. It was Samantha Jones on Sex and the City. So I remember I was 15 and I saw an episode and my parents didn't allow that. You don't watch Sex and the City.
Not.
No. Mm-hmm. So I saw it at my aunt's house and I remember being like, who is this fabulous woman? And I didn't know I was gay. I've always been gay, obviously, but I wasn't in my consciousness. I just remember being like, she's an icon. But I think now I would fill in the word gay icon. She had a big bell and she was wearing that yellow outfit. I don't remember which episode it was. And she commanded a room. And I remember she said, I'm a publicist. And I didn't know what that was. And I told my aunt and she was like, oh, that's someone that works in the government. She thought I was public officer. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And then later on, I was dating someone and I told them, I was like, oh my God, I love Samantha Jones. She works in the government. He's like, no, she doesn't. She's a publicist. And I was like, what's a publicist? And then that kind of impetus and him explaining it to me, I was like, that sounds amazing. Like you hold people's bags. In my head, I was like, I'm going to be holding Birkins, et cetera. And I was like, this is an amazing job. I get to follow celebrities around and you become friends. And it's kind of true, like, because they're around you so much. And a lot of celebrities are so lonely that you do become their friends. And it's very interesting. It was a very interesting world. And I'm actually working on a book as well about how PR kind of changed my life because it actually helped me to come out. It helped me to be authentic. PR is like, you can't hide. If you're authentic, you'll make it. And anyone in Hollywood that makes it longer than 10 years is not fake. There's no way. You can't last. You won't last in this town.
That leads me to like, how did you find the confidence to come out? We all have different coming out stories, but it sounds like you were in a very conservative family. How did you find that confidence to like blossom?
Oh, Blossom. Thank you. I do love that show, Blossom, as well. I just thought of it. she was amazing. I think that for me, it was a slow kind of burn. It was a slow boil. And I think a lot of times what's lovely comes to the surface in time, right? I think I looked at a lot of my friends, they came out when they were 17 or 18, or they dated for years and they had time to come out to their families. And, you know, a lot of their families were white and, you know, were not very conservative and it was a lot more accepting. And, you know, I'd go to pride parties, etc. I came out when I was 28, so I was very late. And I had not even come out to myself until my mid-20s. I was very, very religious. I actually lived in a Muslim dorm at USC. I was very conservative. And so I think that once I came out to myself, it made it easier to then come out to other people. But I think there was always, I had a voice inside of me that was like, you're destined to do greater things. You're gonna be a voice for people. And a lot of Middle Eastern culture is all about silencing and don't say that. And it's embarrassing. And you can be gay, but don't talk about it. And I just wanted to kind of break that. And being a Gemini, I do nothing subtle. So I just was like, I'm going to put a picture of me in a dress, boom. Like, and that was it, you know, and that kind of started everything. So.
You talk about the, you know, the kind of culture that you come from and it being in opposition of how you want to live your life. Like, how do you balance being, you know, someone that people see as someone queer of a culture that doesn't always embrace that, and also, but bring, you know, not fighting against it, but also bringing light to people and being seen as that? Like, what's that balance like for you?
It's tough. I mean, I always try to be very like kind of transparent when it comes to balance, because I feel like that word then puts pressure on the person to balance. And I think it's important that there is nothing to balance. Like, you are multiple identities, and a lot of Middle Eastern and Latino and Asian and anyone that has like a chauvinistic culture understands that if you are femme, whether or not you're identifying as queer or not, you are going to struggle with your masculinity and femininity. So if there is an issue there, you're always going to be living somewhat of a double life. So I think it's important to kind of embrace that at first until you can become either financially independent or emotionally independent from your parents to be able to like step in and be like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm dyeing my hair. I'm wearing lip gloss or nail polish around you, and you're going to have to accept it. And I think it's important that you don't give people permission. I don't ask, I tell. So when I tell you that, when people are like, I get messages every day, I get death threats, I'm going to slit your throat, you're disgusting, etc. I got one today, you're hideous. And so I was like, all right, hideous, yes, honey, use those words. I don't delete, I leave it there. And you know what's funny? In a couple of weeks, that person always deletes their own comment. because it's mortifying. You will always, they never leave those nasty comments. They always delete them because it's mortifying to you. Because what's around those nasty comments is a lot of love and support. So I think it's important. And I don't ask. I tell, but I also will push people, right? I posted something where it was like a Google search and it said, can I be gay and Muslim, right? And a lot of people commented no, but a lot of people said yes. And a lot of people DM'd me from all over the world, from India and Afghanistan. And were like, I'm in an arranged marriage, but it's amazing to see you. And I feel like I have some freedom and maybe I can come out in my own bedroom. Start slow. I think there's this idea in America that we have to all come out. I remember so many people pushed me, right? They would always say, you need to come out. You're so amazing. You need to come out. Don't tell a queer person if you're straight to come out, because you're now wanting them to have this Love, Simon bullshit. And I'm not into it. I'm not into being fodder for your Instagram and for you to cry over. Our stories are our stories. So I think it's important that you, if you want to come out like that guy that just came out a couple weeks ago at 90 years old, you do that. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, what's the problem with that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate the entire idea and the event of coming out. I talked about that mm-hmm. forever, but like, it's ridiculous mm-hmm. that it even exists. So, mm-hmm. you know, whether you want to or not, do it on your own business, but it's actually a ridiculous concept that we have to like, you know, announce ourselves when we're already living. Like, it just doesn't.
Exactly. It's bizarre. Like, why don't straight people do that? Like, that's what I love about Love, Simon, when they have that scene where the straight people come out.
Yes,
and it's like, mm-hmm. it almost felt kind of ridiculous, but then we're queer people all required to. And if we don't do it, and then also when we do it, we're let down if it's not this big to do. Like when I came out, a lot of my friends were like, duh. And it kind of hurt my feelings because I was like, why am I not getting the tears and the excitement and all of that? Because it's like, well, why? But people are like, we love you and accept you. So why would we make it a crying emotional moment? I worked on an unscripted show that we were pitching where it was about everyone comes out. If you are divorced, you have HIV, you have cancer, anything, you're in an interracial relationship, you are coming out to multiple people because people need you to validate it. So we all have that. So why is it only on queer people? I'm not quite getting that still.
Yeah. And it's also like, people have talked about this before, but coming out is like, it's also like it keeps going. You keep coming out all the time in your life.
Yes,
it's not just like you come out to your family, sure, but then you come out every day to someone that you're working with, to a peer, to someone at the grocery store, to your tailor. Like, you literally come out all the time. And so to have it be this like big event, it's just like, it's really dated. It's kind of old.
It's getting old. It's like, and then you have to come out if you're femme, or then you're a Muslim, and then you have to explain that you're Middle Eastern. Oh, I want to wear a dress, or I want to wear a wig. Oh, you're so femme. And then you have to come out to people you're dating. And it's like, oh, it's just, it gets frustrating. So now I'm just like, here's my Instagram. If you're not interested, I don't want to talk to you. Like, see it all. And if you still find it attractive, then call me, because I'm so over like dating guys. And then I don't tell them my Instagram and they see it and they're like intimidated and they're overwhelmed. And I'm like, well, then just overwhelm in the corner. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wait, what is...
See, but I think the more confident you are in yourself, the more appealing you are to someone. Because if you know who you are, it's just like, you want to be with that person because you feel comfortable around them. It's just...
Absolutely.
So. Absolutely. What is you, absolutely right. Everyone.
Thank you. Thanks.
What's going on in the dating scene in LA? What's that like? Are you dating?
It's a dumpster fire. People in LA, like New York, dating, when I've been in New York for long periods of time, dating is so much easier. People walk up, they're not interested, they keep walking. We are in New York, there's no time to bullshit. In LA, it's like, oh my God, but I love your friends and you're close. And you start validating that they don't live in Santa Monica and you're in West Hollywood. Like, you start validating reasons to be with them, and it's all bullshit. And the pool is very small. You know, it's a lot of different problems. And also, everyone's very transient. People come to LA. The reason LA has such weird energy is that people come, they don't make it in 2 years, they leave all their bullshit energy and they go. So like, it's, everyone's very transient. And I don't know if there's like a twink factory in the Valley, because they're printing them. Like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, where are they coming from? So that's another issue. Cause I'm like, I'm 34 and I cannot keep up with like these 18-year-olds. Like, people. I stopped dating actually, luckily, in December. I was like, I'm going to start dating my career. I was like, I'm taking a note from like every strong independent woman. And I was like, you know, I can get myself off better anyways. And it's been great. I think it's been wonderful.
And that's a great place to be when the world ended. You know what I mean?
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You gotta, like,
take care of number one, because that's the only person you're ever going to see ever
again. You can. Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. That's so funny. Caleb and I are so old and like crotchety. Yes. Like we don't have, you didn't have to agree.
I agreed. And then I was like, that's not the right thing. Listen, before I get in trouble for this, English is my second language. So sometimes I have to define words in my head in Farsi. I'm like, crotchety. Okay. That means, okay, got it. So it takes me a second.
This was leading to, because I don't understand TikTok. And that kind of culture. And now I might not have to, because it might go away.
Run away.
So
you have 43 days to live it up. So live it up, I guess. Yeah.
First of all, there's no way that's actually going to happen. Second of all, I mean, maybe.
Crazier things have happened. I mean, Kanye's running for president, so.
Have you heard of coronavirus? That's pretty crazy.
I haven't actually. Thank you for letting me know.
Give us the rundown. TikTok, what's the platform? Who uses it? Why do they use it? And why is it different than a reel now? What's a reel?
And why do you use it? Why do you feel inspired by the platform?
Absolutely. So much to unpack. First of all, you know, Caleb, you know there's someone out there, like some Karen is like, what's coronavirus? You know there's someone out there that has missed all the news. Like, you know there is. TikTok, when I got on TikTok was around February, because our station that I worked for, the studio, was like, we're doing an official TikTok. And it was like people getting in a row and doing like a conga. And I was like, what is happening? I was like, this is not for me. I love like a still photo. I love a video. Like, I'm not into this like weird effects, and it's too many like filters. I was like, not having this. So then I literally did some crazy like viral thing the day Tom Hanks revealed he had coronavirus. We got it on. It did really well. It like went viral. And I was like, wow, this is kind of fun. And then I started doing all of the dances and my back went out. I was like, I can't keep up with this shit. I was like, savage, bougie. Ugh. And then I was like icing my back. I was like, this is mortifying. I was like, and then all the comments were like, you're old. And like, you're old. And like, stop doing this. This sucks. Like, because it's a lot of 12-year-olds.
It is.
They're going to give it to you. There is no sugarcoating anything. So I was like, okay, what can I do? I was like, okay. And then someone called me corny and I was like, oh, okay. If I'm corny, let me see if any other celebrities are corny. Right. So I started following like Jason Derulo and like Shay Mitchell and all these other stuff. And I was like, Jessica Alba. I was like, their videos are horrible and they're getting like a million views. Cause I was like, they're horrible. So my first video was corny ass celebs on TikTok. So I started making fun of celebrities on TikTok and what they were doing. I was like, they're so cheesy. They're forcing their kids to get in it. Like, I really kind of came for them. People loved it. So then I started doing that. And then it just kind of blossomed. I stopped doing the dances. I became myself. And I always tell people, I'm like, if you want to get on TikTok, don't do the dances. Don't do the voiceovers. I did all the voiceovers. People were like, oh, he's a little off. I'm like, bitch, like, why don't you try doing it? Like, it took me like 8 hours to get it right. It was just so annoying. And then when I started doing that, it kind of took off. And then I started doing, you know, corny ass celebs I worked for. So I started telling horror stories of like working with Erica Jane and like how much I loved working with Michael B. Jordan. And I just started, and people love to get like a little lens in Hollywood and kind of the dark side of it. And so it kind of just like took off from there. And then I just started like just turning the camera on myself and just kind of yelling at people, and they loved it.
We love yelling at people into a camera. I mean, that's literally all we do here.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
I have to like, I just finished up working on Beetlejuice on Broadway, and the TikTokers loved Beetlejuice. Like, it was like one of the bigger songs on it because of one of the filters like switches like to a demon face. I have no idea. But one of my friends got a TikTok during it because he was like, this is fun. I just want to like try it. Yeah. And he told one of the younger cast members, there were children in the show, one of the younger cast members, and they were like, you know, that's for like kids, right? Like, the shade was so deep. Like, she was like, like you said, it's like, they were like, this is for kids. Like, why are adults on here? It's like our parents ruining Facebook.
Yes.
Totally. Absolutely. That's really what it was. And before I got on. They are, listen, the Karens are ruining everything. I mean, I'm in Trump country. They're selling Trump stuff at the gas station across the street. So Orange County is a nightmare for Karens. They're everywhere. This is where they breed. Yeah, it's great. But you know.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say about, like, I think with, like, all of the TikTok stuff, it started out very young. And I think because of quarantine, everyone kind of jumped on, like, all the older people. So it's kind of shifted. Yeah.
I always forget that, like, there are these random pockets of, like, blue nation where everyone is fucking garbage.
Red, you mean?
Yes.
Well, like.
Okay. Okay. I was like, isn't it red now, or do they change the color? Yes, red areas. Well, Central California is very red, so people don't know that. Like, whenever you see a mullet, run the other way. That's Trump. So, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's a struggle. That is very, you know, Housewives is very, Ramona came under some heat, right, recently for, you know, traveling back and forth to Florida, going to Trump parties and all that nonsense. Yeah. That fundraiser in the Hamptons, right, that was for Trump, for sure.
I'm sure it was. Oh, God.
Girl, always. All right. Well, we're going to move into some of our segments that we do on the show. Caleb, do you want to start with your blonde girl moment?
Take it away, Britt, please.
Maybe I'd better go home. Maybe I'd better go home.
Okay. So I was thinking, well, first of all, we got these little like care packages from Qcox. So this is what got me thinking. They sent a ring pop. And I was like, the 90s were like a golden age for candy. I think so, maybe because we were children so I started doing like, what was the best 90s candy? And so this is, I pinned them against each other. And so we're going to like debate between the two. So Britt, put the first one up. We have Hubba Bubba Bubble Tape versus Bubble Yum. I love the bubble tape, but as a kid, I didn't quite understand the concept of gum. So I would chew like too much, like 6 feet of it, and then eat crackers at the same time.
Ew, crackers?
Crackers. I loved crackers. Like
with gum?
Yes, I didn't understand the concept of gum. You know, like when I used to swallow gum as a kid because I didn't understand the concept of chewing it. So that's the bubble tape. But Bubble Yum was my favorite because it came with all these different flavors.
Cotton candy flavor, the best.
Cotton candy was the best. So on my Instagram, what was the percentage? Let's show the percentage ones, Britt. 56% said bubble tape, but 44% said Bubble Yum. But like, you know, this is my segment, and I'm saying Bubble Yum is the better of the two. Would you guys agree? Yes.
I agree.
I don't agree, but that's okay. I like the tape. I like the tape because I liked feeling kind of butch with the like cutting it and then having the little tool. So sure. I liked that.
Speaking of butch, what didn't make the cut was Big League Chew. That was the one where it was shredded and you like pretended it was like chewing tobacco. Gross. And Chiclets.
That is so problematic, being like, you can chew tobacco just like your dad. Like, what?
Yes.
That's insane. So bad.
So the next one is the strawberry candy versus candy cigarettes.
Candy cigarettes is so fucked up. Oh my God.
Again, problematic. What is this?
The candy cigarettes I loved as a kid, though. Like, you know, you would pretend to smoke. Did you guys do that or not do that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pen cap.
Yes. Literally. I'm doing that right now. I don't. Are the strawberry candies called strawberry candies? Like, do they have a name?
Strawberry candy.
Strawberry candy.
I love the chewy middle. So let's look at the percentage. Yeah, 68 said strawberries, 32 said candy. We live in a different time now that people reject the candy cigarettes. It's bad. It's a bad thing. But I would agree. I love strawberries more than the candy cigarettes because of the flavor. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Agree. The strawberry candy is, for me, one of the more perfect candies because you have a really crunchy hard and then you have a nice chewy soft and the flavor is very like intense and fruity. And I like a candy that you don't actually see in the wild that only exists at your grandmother's house. Like, where do you buy that?
Some candies that didn't make the cut for this one were the root beer barrels. Remember those?
Yeah.
Love those. I see. I love them. And then the classic Werther's Original, which I would get at my grandma's.
Ugh.
Love
I don't
those.
Love, I don't love a caramel. Just like a I hard. No. Okay. I don't want that.
On to the next one. We have.
we were triggered we have, by that.
we have Nerds and Warheads.
Wow.
Look at those. Throwback. I'm going to start with Warheads. We used to ride the school bus, and our school bus driver would give us Warheads. And you know, you'd like put them in your mouth and you'd lick them and you'd get like, oh, that. But you loved it so much because the middle was good. Mm-hmm. And Nerds, I absolutely hate Nerds.
What?
Nerds can hit the road. I do not like Nerds.
Oh, I love Nerds. I love Nerds rope. Remember the rope?
Nerds rope, yes. Of course.
But let's I'm against everyone on this. Let's look at the percentage for this one. Yeah, exactly. 65% Nerds. Yeah, but like, you know, like you're driving in the car and your mom goes over a speed bump and all of those Nerds go everywhere and you lose them all.
You're just being careless.
I think, but you're a child. Like, I didn't, it was careless.
Here's my take. Now, on Instagram, I did vote for Warheads because the category is 90s candy. I think that Nerds are timeless. Nerds are now, you know, Nerds are forever. But Warheads were very 90s in like the trading. You wanted to get the right things. You bought them like
yes,
on their
black
own.
Cherry. Yes.
The little yellow. Yeah. Kind of thing. And so Warheads to me are a 90s candy. Nerds, however, are forever. And Caleb, this podcast is now over because you don't like Nerds.
Thank you.
Bye. Amir, what do you think?
I mean, listen, I do love Warheads, but I think, like you said, Nerds are timeless. I had a Warhead martini once in Ooh. Portland that was delicious. Mm-hmm. It was delicious. So that was kind of fun.
I can get into that.
I think timeless candies are Skittles, hot tamales.
Love hot tamales.
Mike and Ike's.
They're your favorite.
Timeless for me. like some other candies that didn't make the cut but are like totally 90s nostalgia are like Pop Rocks, Fun Dip.
So good.
Fun Dip.
Baby bottle pop, lick the pop, dip it and shake it, and then lick it again. Like, come on, you can't beat that slogan.
Yeah.
So naughty. The naughty slogan.
It's fast, you know? Lick it up, dip it and shake it, and lick it again. But I agree. I was surprised to not see Fun Dip as part of this, because that to me is the most iconic 90s candy.
I hated the chalky dip thing. I didn't understand that. So it wasn't, no.
I would eat those. I would use one of them, like down to the, like make it like so skinny using all of the powder so that I could have one stick to just eat by itself. I loved.
Oh.
Smart.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's my segment for today. 90s candy.
We love it. What would you say? What's your favorite of all of them? What's your ultimate 90s candy?
From the 90s? No, that's early 2000s. Wait, sorry. Early 2000s. I'm like, okay. 90s, I'd say a Tootsie Roll. I love a Tootsie Roll.
Oh, wow. Mm. Classic.
Tootsie Roll. I think, but Tootsie Roll is also a classic one. So yeah. I don't know.
Childhood candy. You know, we say
childhood
90s
candy. Dessert. Yeah.
Yeah. But some things from the 90s, you know, just did not, they do not have that timeless classic moment, you know, Surge, RIP.
What was the orange drink that you, the powder?
Tang.
Tang, yes.
Tang.
Tang is very 80s, I feel. Like, Tang is like, and what, I'm trying to think of something else from the like, bottle, like wax bottles that you would like bite and like.
Wax bottles are classic. I love a wax bottle with juice.
So weird. Like, what is that? Anyway, thank you, Caleb, for your Blonde Girl moments.
Thank you.
It is time to move on to Merch Madness. Now, Amir, you specialize in celebrities, in PR, and yes. big names. So yes. This is a segment where I take my collection of musical theater T-shirts and pin them against each other in a versus format and declare a winner. Now, for this okay. week's Merch Madness, I went with the route of, celebrity vehicles on Broadway. Okay, oh. shows that existed to showcase a huge celebrity. So we're gonna start with, if you are a big celebrity and the show is for you, you know you're a big star if you are literally on the T-shirt. So here we have my Bette Midler Hello Dolly T-shirt, which is very subtle. And not loud at all. You can hardly tell that Bette was in the show. As you can see, it's ridiculous. Her name is huge, and it looks very old-timey. Red and white. Looks great on a marquee. Not so much on my pink undertone skin. I don't want to look like a tomato, so I don't wear this very often, but I felt like it was a piece of history that I needed to have. And also, when I went back to see the show, I saw it with Bette, obviously, and then I went back when Bernadette Peters was playing Dolly, because I love Bernadette. And when I went back, they had Bernadette Peters Hello Dolly shirts like this. So shout out to the merch company for printing all those different shirts. This is a fine shirt. It's just kind of a lot. Yeah. It's kind of a lot. It reminds me of when I went to see How to Succeed in Business, the revival with Daniel Radcliffe, and one of the shirts just had his face on it, and I was like, that is not going to be owned by me. I don't always love when a shirt has someone's likeness on it. However, I do have a Visit shirt with a drawing of Cheetah Rivera on it that, you know.
That's Cheetah, though.
That's one of my favorites. Exactly. So, you know, we make exceptions. My next shirt that I'm going to review is from the recent revival of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which was a big vehicle for a lot of celebrities. Obviously, starting with Neil Patrick Harris, Darren Criss, Taye Diggs, Andrew Rannells. I saw Michael C. Hall because I'm obsessed with Dexter. Big fan of his work.
Me too.
I love this shirt. I love the story behind the shirt. I went for my birthday. I bought a front row ticket. He spat on me. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, actually spat water like onto me. So that was really special.
He actually reached down, grabbed open Elliot's mouth, and went right into it.
Wow. Very pre-COVID.
I love this shirt because I love purple. And also the little foil. So rare do we get like a shiny musical theater T-shirt, and it is held up in the wash. You know, it's still a little shiny after a couple of years. I like how graphic it is. It's a great logo, simple, clean, but good colors. And I like the memories that I have with the shirt because I like saw the show on my birthday, bought the shirt, went to Mickey Spillane's to meet my friends after, and it was just like a great night. And so the clear winner of Merch Madness for me this week is my Hedwig and the Angry Inch shirt. For nostalgia and also general design. Like, will actually wear this, this probably not so much. So that's Merch Madness for the week. We like to end things here with a little game. Caleb, what do you have for us this week?
So, Amir, I have some quick questions. Just let me know how you feel on each one, yeah? Okay. So your go-to karaoke song.
Carrie Underwood's song about, like, you know, being in the bar and the cheat. I can't remember the name of the song, but like, I'm going to carve a thing in your four-wheel drive, that song.
Baseball bat.
Before he cheats, Carrie Underwood.
There you go. Yeah.
It's a great song.
That's my go-to.
Traditional Muslim food dish that you love.
So there's no Muslim food. So there's just like different culture. Well, it's because like Muslim is not really like, it wouldn't have a food. So it would be like Middle Eastern food or Afghani, et cetera. Exactly. So Persian food, I think my favorite is, I'm sure a lot of people in LA have had it, tadik. It's like a crunchy rice. So if you go to, what they do is they put the rice on the bottom of the pot and they put oil and they make it almost like a kind of crunchy rice that you can put like, you know, stew on top, and it's great. It's like a kind of delicacy. Yeah, it's delicious.
Yum. And that's like a main dish, or is that like an appetizer? Like main dish?
That's like an appetizer. Exactly. It's an appetizer. Okay, it's called tadik. Yeah.
Yummy. Yum. Okay. So all self-care is like good care. But are you more like at home spa night, yoga meditation, or block off the weekend, no work? Which one of the three?
Probably the last one. I like to avoid people, so I'll just run away. Like Irish exit, Irish goodbye, see ya.
Yes. What exotic animal do you envision yourself as?
Oh, envision myself as. I've had every exotic animal, but iguanas, toads. I think I would probably be... it's a great question. You know what? I like pandas. I think I'd be a panda. Like, they're cuddly, they're fun, they trip around, they're clumsy. Super cute. Yes.
They're adorable.
So what was your first survival job?
I did or not like- know where that was going. I was like, first what? survival job.
Or like job you had in high school. Yeah. Whichever one.
My parents won't let me work in high school because they're that Middle Eastern. they're like, people are going to see you working at the yogurt shop. I'm like, so what?
I think
it's crazy. First survival job was probably working LA Fashion Week. I was getting paid $10 an hour and I had to like put out the runway and there was like 600 people. I mean, it was insane. Paris Hilton walked. I mean, it was weird, but there I was.
Iconic still. Yes.
Thank you. Thanks.
So I was listening to your podcast and you say you're 6'2". I'm 6'1". And so, yes, talls. What's the best thing about being 6'2"? You know, like, Elliot's really short. So let's, like, make him be jealous of what's great about being tall. Sell me.
Yeah, you know what? Okay, I'm going to sell you. But just to be in all transparency, because you are 6'1", I'm only 6'1 3/4". So I'm not quite 6'2". So that's okay. A lie. I round up, like most men do, but I lie about my
Caleb.
Height.
Uh-huh.
I am 6'1".
Are you? What's good about being tall? I think what's good about being tall is that people think you're a lot hotter than you are. That's just like the fact is people see you're tall and they're just kind of forget about if you're hot or not. They're just like, you're hot automatically. It's really great.
That is totally
Elliot,
I mean,
what's
like,
great about being about short?
Yes, I will get to being short, but like that is okay. such a meme. It's like, is he hot or is he 6'3"? Like,
see, when someone's 6'5", you're like, they're hot. Like, there's no way they're not hot.
Like, yeah,
you're
immediately.
Like, you got your like climbing gear just to like go.
What's great about being short is I'm very nimble. So especially that comes in handy in New York when it's raining and there are umbrellas, bitch. I'm not gonna be slowed down. Okay, my umbrella is going this way. I'm ducking under. So that really helps me. Nice. Yeah, I love being short.
Good, awesome. I'm with you on that. So I've never been to California. What is a California must do? If I was to come tomorrow, what, and COVID wasn't a thing, where should I go?
What I love about California is that year round, even in San Francisco, even when it's a little cold, you can do rooftops, right? In New York, it's like kind of a luxury and a privilege, but in LA it's like all year round. Even when it's raining, they'll do a rooftop. So you can do a rooftop, you can do like a frozen margarita, a frosé all year. Mm-hmm. So that's the best part. I think that's
love that.
Yeah.
Last thing is I can't believe this is my job moment you've had in your career or in your entire life.
I can't believe job moment is probably Erica's publicist reaching out and saying you're a liar, and then the fact that Erica Jane is talking about me and saying I'm a liar and is kind of like actually perturbed by me is super wonderful. I'm like so here for it. I think it's wonderful. And then he in the email it said, have blessed day. Mr. High and Mighty Publicist did not use a preposition. So that was very fun for me as a grammar.
Come on, have blessed day.
Have blessed day, bitch. I was like, okay. I was like, all right.
And to him we say, next, right?
Yes, I love it. Bye. Bye-bye.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Amir, for coming on the show. This has been really, really fun. Where can people find you on social media?
Absolutely. I've had so much fun. Thanks again for having me on. It was so super, super fun. Everyone can find me at Amir Yass, Y-A-S-S official. And my last name is Yassai, so I did not make it up. It's not a stage name. Yass is in my last name. So that's the truth.
Destiny.
Yes.
And they can find your podcast, The Take on Broadway Podcast Network, of course. You can find... you can find us, but let's talk about next week, Caleb, before we go.
Oh, yes. Okay, sorry. Yes, yeah.
Again, next week is our 3-year anniversary spectacular. We have some really big Broadway guests joining us, and we are so excited.
We're going to list them. Can we list them?
I think we can. They're confirmed.
Okay. We have Jackie Hoffman.
Our first ever guest on the podcast.
Yes. Tia Wicks, who we got so wasted with the first time that we had to bring her back.
Episode.
Caitlin Kinnunen from the prom.
We had to record her episode twice. So yes. Twice as nice.
Yes. And then Alex Brightman
is going to be playing our games with us. So we got big stars coming and also lots of other fun surprises, big announcements about the future of Equity One, what our content is going to be looking like in the next couple months. So please join us, order your Q cocktail on their Instagram, on our Instagram and our bio. And also, you know, really quick, I'm raising money for Broadway Cares. If you are able to, please donate to that. It'll help me get to my goal and make a big difference in helping a lot of artists right now. Okay, great. That's all the plugs we have. You can find the podcast at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and also at Equity1_ on Twitter.
Send us an email at EquityOnePodcast@gmail.com and head over to the iTunes app and give us a 5-star rating and review so other people can find our podcast as well.
And while you're there, do the same thing for The Take On. Come on. You're already in the app.
Thank you.
You can find me at Elliot Maddox on everything.
And I'm at Caleb Dickey on everything. And until next time.
Cheers.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.